Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Barrett hands it Samuel, sweeping it wide to the right, and he's going to waltz into the end zone for a touchdown on a 3-yard run by Curtis Samuel, who made it look easy. Running into the end zone goes Curtis Samuel for his 6th rushing TD of the year. First and goal, Ohio State at the Maryland 4. Barrett in a shotgun, gets the snap. Barrett keeps it himself, moving left side. Easy waltz into the end zone for the touchdown. JT Barrett, snap to Barrett. Barrett's going to take off running himself. A block from Weber will get Barrett into the end zone for the touchdown. JT Barrett, his 2nd rushing touchdown of the afternoon.
Can't ice him again. Keith Duncan, true freshman from North Carolina, from 33 yards, and a walk-off winner. Right through, and the Hawkeyes have stunned the Wolverines. Michigan unbeaten no more. But the Wolverines challenged on the road for the first time. Don't pass the test. Pitch to Gallman. Stumbles. Not going to get there. Not going to get there. Matt Galambos came up to make the big stop, the middle linebacker. And there's 58 seconds left. And Pittsburgh has that one timeout left. Ryan Winslow to hold it for Chris Blewett to try to knock off number 2 at Clemson. All the way and good. And it is stunned disbelief inside Death Valley.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is a Monday afternoon extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, and you know what we like to do, do you not? On Monday afternoon extravaganzas, we like to bring you Monday Afternoon Quarterback!
Grab your helmet. You're going in. It's time to play Monday Afternoon Quarterback on 106.5 The Ticket.
All football pretty much all day today, and it's kind of awesome that way. And almost everything we focus on, almost, is going to be surrounded on what happened on Saturday. The first time since 1985 that the AP or coaches poll numbers 2, 3, and 4 all lost on the same day. That's a long time ago. That was my junior year. Well, technically, it was my senior year of high school because I graduated in the spring of 86. So that's my senior year of high school the last time that happened. What an unbelievable weekend for college football. What an unbelievable next 2 weeks we're going to have trying to sort out who is going to play in conference championship games, trying to figure out who the college football playoff committee is going to be most impressed by in the course of that. Could we actually see a team jump over a conference champion, a two-loss potential conference champion, but a team playing better at the end that doesn't make a conference championship game pass them up for a spot in the playoff? That's going to have to sort itself out. The Big Ten East is a train wreck right now. Not really a train wreck. It's just so goofy in the way things could play out. If Michigan wins out, they win the Big Ten East, period. If Ohio State wins out, but Penn State also wins out, Ohio State does not win the Big Ten East. Penn State does by way of tiebreaker and goes into the conference championship game, which would be against a very, very highly ranked and rated Wisconsin team who had already lost to both Michigan and Ohio State. There is so much fun to be had in the Big Ten. And as before we get into all of that, and we start talking about the new rankings that are out today, of course, the AP and the coaches' polls actually late last night, before we get into all of that and what it means and what, you know, a good defeat is versus a bad defeat, what a more impressive victory is versus another team's victory, what a resume and a slate of victories, which one is most impressive. Now we have to add in another element, another wrinkle to all of this. Jim Kushlin and I were just talking about it before we came on the air. Michigan quarterback Wilton Spate. Not only did they lose their game on a last-second, literally last-second field goal to Iowa on Saturday, Michigan quarterback Wilton Spate, about, what, 3 hours ago, I saw the story that said he could be a game-time decision at Indiana because he injured his shoulder against those Iowa Hawkeyes. And I thought, well, probably not that big of a deal. Maybe a sprain, something sore, but he'll probably be okay. And then here we are, right before we go on the air, we find out something very, very different. Actually, about 50 minutes ago, it became official. Wilton Spate doesn't just have a sprained shoulder. Wilton Spate doesn't just have a tweak in his throwing shoulder. Wilton Spate has a broken collarbone. And the Michigan quarterback who had guided the team to a 9-0 record prior to that upset loss against Iowa, at Iowa, Wilton Spate has essentially had his season ended. He is going to be out indefinitely, and indefinite it obviously extends well into the winter and beyond, and at this point they'll probably be lucky if he's ready for spring practice looking ahead to the 2017 year. According to the source, and this is from MLive.com, quoting MGoBlog, says Spate will miss the remainder of the regular season, the upcoming game against Indiana, and the regular season finale at Ohio State, and probably every bowl or any and every bowl or playoff game that they could be a part of, and well into the winter. Michigan's head coach Jim Harbaugh was asked if Spate would be a game-time decision for Saturday, and Harbaugh said he could be, and that's just, I think, gamesmanship with Harbaugh. Harbaugh went on to explain, according to MLive.com, that John O'Korn and third-stringer Shane Morris would get the bulk of the team's reps this week, as Spate's status would be dependent on how he felt throughout the week. Now, I've got to believe, and this is just one of those goofy things, I've got to believe that that conversation with Wilton Spate, or excuse me, with Jim Harbaugh about Wilton Spate, took place before this announcement. Matter of fact, there it is. Harbaugh had nothing definitive to say about this Monday morning. But later this afternoon, we find out about the broken collarbone. So most of this, of course, is going to be irrelevant, what Harbaugh said about him possibly being ready. A separate story at MLive.com says that the Wolverines are ready, and that they are ready, as of 1 hour ago, this is Nick Baumgartner reporting, that they are ready to rally around John O'Korn as the starting quarterback now that Spate is going to be out. Harbaugh did not give any specific details about the injury, blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, the majority of the reps will go to John O'Korn and some to third-stringer Shane Morris. Wolverines players say they're confident that O'Korn can pick up the slack. All-American tight end Jake Butt said, if John's number is called, we're fully confident in him. We've seen what he can do since he got here. He's been a hard worker, a great note-taker, a great leader, and he's got everything you need to get the job done. If it turns out Wilton can't go, O'Korn will be ready to go, and we are fully confident in him. O'Korn, of course, is the transfer in from Houston in the winter of 2015. He's got 2 years left to play. O'Korn said, it's been a challenging year for me personally, but it's been great. I haven't seen as much playing time as I thought I might, or maybe I wanted, but I don't know if I'd change anything. Wilton's been playing great. I just have to play my own role. All right, so players are essentially saying John O'Korn's the man. Harbaugh is saying, well, both guys will get reps, talking about O'Korn and Morris. But Wilton Spate is apparently just flat out done. Which brings us to this question as we try to evaluate where things are in the college football season. And we'll talk about that new ranking and about Ohio State's surge up the leaderboard, if you will, because of back-to-back 62-3s. When's the last time you saw something like that? An identical score in back-to-back weeks would be strange enough if it was 28-7. It's like, wow, right on the number. But when you're getting up into the points as high as they are, to have that be the exact score in back-to-back weeks, 62-3 over Nebraska, 62-3 over Maryland, that's just kind of trippy. I don't know what to make of it other than just maybe strange coincidence, but it's really, really interesting, and they surge up the rankings, and we'll get into that in a second. But here's what we have to talk about, my friends, with respect to the University of Michigan. And by the way, major props to the Big Ten for who they are and what they are right now. And what I mean by that is, as you look at the rankings today, and talking about now, of course, the AP and the coaches poll rankings, we'll find out about the CFP, the College Football Playoff, tomorrow. But if you look at the rankings today, you have essentially the best conference in college football represented in a huge way. Ohio State 2, Michigan 4, Wisconsin 6, Penn State 9. Four of the top nine are Big Ten teams. Four out of the top nine. The rest of the country, you get the other five spots. Four of them live in Big Ten country. That, to me, is spectacular. Really an amazing thing. A place for the Big Ten to go. And it's kind of what I talked about all last year and really the year before that, before Jim Harbaugh was hired, about what a return to prominence, Michigan football, and to a different extent, Penn State football, would mean for the national reputation of the Big Ten. Everybody talked about how the SEC is the best football in the land, the SEC this, the SEC that. Well, I'm looking at it right now, and I see Alabama, and then I see not SEC, 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 and I'm like, ah, they're not in the top 10 anywhere else. Then I get down to the 11th and the 12th. You don't see SEC again until you get 16. So four of the top nine are now Big Ten, and I just think that's outstanding. Now, to my point about the College Football Playoff Committee and the job that they have to do, not only do they have to decide which of the one-loss teams in the 2, 3, and 4 spots is the least objectionable loss, and trying to decide how they rate the top four, which would be the final four, of course, in the playoffs. They have to decide whose loss is the least damaging. Is it Clemson's? Is it Michigan's 1.0 field goal loss at Iowa? Is it Louisville's loss at Clemson? Is it Ohio State's loss at Penn State? Is it Wisconsin's loss to USC? Or excuse me, Washington's, beg pardon. Which of these one-loss teams is the least damaging? Then they're going to have to figure out who wins conference championships when this is all said and done. And then they're going to have to think about this. They're going to have to think about the same thing to an extent that they had to think about with Ohio State a couple of years ago when JT Barrett went down and Cardale Jones was the man. They're going to think about, but this is a little bit different because Wilton Spate going out now with two games to play is different than when JT Barrett got hurt 2 years ago and they went on to win the championship under Cardale Jones. But they have to decide if Michigan wins out, let's say they take care of business against Indiana and against Ohio State. And that Ohio State one might be the answer, by the way. But let's say they do. They do win out and go to the Big Ten championship game. Does the committee look at them any differently as far as what they accomplish versus how good they will be in a potential playoff with their backup quarterback? Do they wait who the best team is based on how that best team has played most of the year, or do they weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, do they weight a team's ability based on how well they'll play without that guy in a potential playoff? Now, good news for Michigan is the Ohio State game is, for all intents and purposes, a playoff game. You win that, and I think you win their hearts. Now, the problem is you still have to win a Big Ten championship game against probably Wisconsin, and they already gave you everything you wanted and more in a 14-7 win way back in week number, what, 5? And then maybe you win that, and it's a non-debate. But what happens if Michigan happens to lose the Big Ten championship game? Now you got a 2-loss Wisconsin team. You got a 2-loss Ohio State team, because Michigan will have beaten them. You got a 2-loss Penn State team, and you got a 2-loss... Wisconsin, they all have 2 losses. Who goes? Is it just Wisconsin because they win the conference championship? What about the fact that Wisconsin and Michigan split in a scenario like that? Certainly Ohio State couldn't go because Michigan would have beaten them, and so had Penn State. But certainly Penn State couldn't go because Michigan had beaten them 49-10. Do you see the chaos in trying to decide who goes to the playoff out of the Big Ten, based on so many different scenarios and so many different considerations as to what weight the committee gives various things like your one loss, or in that case I just described, potentially two losses for everybody. You could have a two-loss Penn State, two-loss Wisconsin, two-loss Ohio State, and then after the championship game, a two-loss Michigan, and try to figure out which one of them goes. In a case like that, is the committee just going to say, well, whichever one of them ended up as the conference champion, or would they say whichever one of them looks the best out of the four two-loss teams? Not really sure how they would do that. But that's the chaos we have for ourselves right now in the scenario we have in a Final Four college football playoff format that I am just going to start begging very, very soon is a top eight because I want to see all four of those teams battling it out at the end of the day with Bama and Clemson and Louisville and Washington and Oklahoma or whoever it is that's going to be in. That's what I would love to see happen. I want to see that final eight instead of that final four so that we have some room and some margin for error. And plus, I want to see something like Alabama and Oklahoma in round one, Ohio State and Washington in round two, Louisville and Wisconsin in round three, or not round three, excuse me, these are all first round games. And then Michigan and Clemson, and then have them play on from there. Talk about theater. Talk about drama. Talk about college football at its finest. That's what I want to see. That's why I want to see that next round of games and make it into an Elite Eight, not just because we need to make sure that all of the teams that belong in the playoff are represented, but also for the selfish purposes of being a fan and seeing those matchups in week one or round one of the playoffs to see what it brings us. My goodness. All right, let me open up the phone lines at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. What are your thoughts on the top four right now? Who should they be when the playoff committee comes out with them tomorrow? And how bad was that loss for Michigan, not just to Iowa, but the loss of quarterback Wilton Spate? Jim Cushlin is here as well, waiting dutifully for his say in all of this. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, and, you know, as I keep looking at this since Saturday, and now we at least have the AP poll out to kind of give you a little base, now it's getting trickier because they're only, first and foremost, it really is Alabama and everybody else. There's only two undefeateds in all of Division I. The other is Western Michigan, by the way, of the Mid-American Conference. And it's about how you're going to put these teams in their proper place. We're possibly looking at if things break for Ohio State that you could, because this will be the third year of it, right? So there's been eight teams that have been in the playoff already, and all eight were conference champions. So if Ohio State wins out, expect that to get blown out of the water. And you know what? You're so right, Bob. Some of you said
Wait. Start over. What did you just say?
All eight teams that have so far made the playoff in the first couple of years of this playoff,
yeah,
all eight of them, four one year, four in the other, were all conference champions. I kind of believe if Ohio State wins out, in which case it would be Penn State, as kind of mentioned, for in the Big Ten title game because of tiebreaker, I think the committee gives a spot to a one-loss non-conference champion Ohio State. I really do.
Instead of Penn State or in addition to Penn State? Two
instead
from the Big Ten.
I think it's going to be an instead of.
If they did that, they might as well blow the whole thing up.
Exactly. That's the part I was about to guess.
Pack it with TNT, pack it with C4 plastic explosive, and just blow the entire thing up, honest to God. If they did that, there would be a major problem because what would be the point of having conference championships anymore?
Yep.
They have a Power 5 conference set up. And if one of the, if we know one of those teams technically could get blocked out every time because it's only a Final Four, which is stupid. But the Big 12 has put themselves in the position to be that default exclusion because they won't have a conference championship game. If they did what you just described, what's the benefit of any of those conferences having a conference championship game if the results of it are going to be ignored?
And you make an absolutely valid point. That's why the reason I have a big smile on my face today, Bob, is because with the results of this past Saturday, we now have it's in place to this being the kind of year that demonstrates, okay, guys, this is why you need to make it eight. It'll be so obvious if what happened Saturday holds through these next couple weeks. I'm totally in favor of it.
Yeah, you know what? I get all of that, Jim. I get the entire thing about 8, and I want it to be 8 too, but I don't want to see somebody get screwed now just be, you know, while we wait for the for that to happen. And that's the problem that I see here. And somebody, that's going to happen to somebody. There are so many scenarios, and I just laid out a bunch of them in my opening monologue. Can you imagine, for example, Michigan winning out? So Michigan, it takes their one loss into the Big Ten championship game, dealing Ohio State their second loss. Penn State winning out and sitting there going, dang, we just missed a shot at the Big Ten championship game with our two losses, but we're a top seven team, okay? Then Michigan goes into that Big Ten championship game with its one loss against Wisconsin with two losses.
Okay.
And loses to Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin has their two losses. Michigan has their two losses. Ohio State has their two. And Penn State sitting there with their two. And in some weird, convoluted way, they've all beaten one another.
Right.
At some point. Wisconsin would have split with Michigan 1-1. Wisconsin would have lost to Ohio State. But Ohio State lost to Penn State. But Penn State lost to Michigan 49-10. Good luck picking that. The only way, and this is where I said, if you don't regard the championship game, then blow the whole system up. I would imagine you would have to say Wisconsin avenged their loss to Michigan by winning it when it mattered more. Michigan won the battle in week 5, but Wisconsin won it in week 13. And so therefore they are the Big Ten champions and they get to go. And then, you know what? The rest of it is Alabama, and then it's probably Clemson and who knows if Louisville wins out, or, you know, they go to the at-large teams from that point. Well, Louisville wouldn't be a conference champion.
Nope.
So think about that. You know, you said Ohio State might be the first non-conference champion in the 3 years of the college football playoff to make it, but maybe it would be Louisville, and would they take them over? Let's say Washington still wins the Pac-12 conference. Are they prepared to do that? Are they prepared to shut out the winner of the Pac-12 for a non-winner of the ACC? That's another really difficult question they're going to have to answer.
Oh, no, absolutely it is. It's going to be a difficult question, and we'll find out just how much these first 2 years where they said conference champions mean something. Well, if it all holds this way, we're going to find that out, in such short order. And, you know, I'm sorry. I'm rooting for chaos because, as you know, Bob, I'm a huge proponent of it going to 8, as yeah. I know you are, too.
I am.
And this is now becoming the setup to help make that argument even stronger. So I'm totally rooting for the chaos. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and I think we're going to get it. I really, really do. I think we're going to get it. It's just very, very disconcerting to me that this is all going to be placed into the hands of a committee of 12, all of whom have different agendas.
Yep.
And all of whom have different beliefs on what's you know, the best loss versus the most damaging
sure.
loss. Which are the biggest wins versus the not so big wins and that sort of thing. And everybody has a different opinion, and it changes from week to week. Here's an example. What was I doing last week when you were playing some of the clips after the first round of 4 was announced? Or I'm sorry, the second one. Beg your pardon. Last week was the second time they announced the rankings of
right.
the Final Four. Heather Dinich of ESPN, and I asked you to play that clip again, and she ripped Michigan.
Oh,
saying, She said, I don't know why Michigan's in there at all. Michigan doesn't have a very good schedule. They haven't really proven they can beat anybody. So I don't know why Michigan is in the top 4 at all. And I was like, what is she talking about? Michigan has beaten 3 of the top 12 in the rankings, in the CFP.
Not to mention they were one of only 4 power conference undefeateds. It was about
right.
as straightforward
they were undefeated
as you could
and
get.
They had beaten Colorado, Wisconsin, and Penn State. 3 of the top 12. I said,
and
what
all
is this
three
woman
of those
talking
teams
about?
Could end up in a conference championship
game, hold on,
game,
hold on.
By
I'm going somewhere. I'm making a point.
Okay.
So this morning, she, the same woman, is on with Mike and Mike, and they ask her who the top 4 she thinks would be and should be. And she says, Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Ohio State. And not necessarily in that order. I can't remember what order, because all I know is I was sitting here going, wait a second, is this the same woman that last week said Michigan did not belong in when they were undefeated? Now that Michigan loses a game, she says Michigan should be in there. And then what was the reason she said? She said Michigan has some really impressive wins. They beat Colorado, Penn State, and Wisconsin. Wait a minute. Now I know she's not on the committee. She's just somebody pretending to know what she's talking about doing football on Mike and Mike this morning and on ESPN. But if she can, you know, flip-flop her mood from last week to this week, you know, like anybody else can, what are the committee members going to do? What are they thinking from week to week to week to week? This is a woman who had an undefeated team with three big, you know, really impressive wins, not in the top four. And then they lose a game and she puts them in the top four because of their big wins. I don't understand that. I'm not going to be able to process that. I can't wrap my brain around it. And if that's the way people are thinking, that's another reason why we need to get to 8. All right. What we do need to get to is a timeout here. It's 3:32. Going to get a bottom of the hour. Excuse me. A bottom of the hour sports center coming here. And then on the other side, we're going to be talking college football. We're going to do a lot of it. Drew Hallett, MaizeAndBrew.com, covering the Michigan Wolverines. We'll get his thoughts on what happened at Iowa and what happens now. Bill Conley, SB Nation, national college football writer, will join us from the national perspective at 4:05. Then Chris Lauterbach, 11Warriors.com, covering the Buckeyes on the incredible back-to-back win 62-3 over two Big Ten opponents in the last 2 weeks and where it puts them on the national ranking map. All of that coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Search Facebook /106.5 The Ticket. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we roll onward. 866-240-1065. We're going to talk to Drew Hallett of MaizeAndBrew.com in just a second. But first, let me get to Robert, who's calling us from Fayette. Robert, thanks for joining us right here on The Ticket. Go right ahead, sir.
You were talking about the college football rankings. You know, this might sound really absurd, but, you know, back when Ohio State won the first national title with the rankings,
Yeah. Everybody
was all on Alabama and how good they looked because they were so undefeated, this, that, and the other. But you had a third-string quarterback for Ohio State come in and beat them.
Yep.
You know, all of this is just a bunch of mumbo-jumbo. You got guys that are trying to put people in the right spots, and nobody's done it yet. You know, it's going to take some time.
So what's your solution? I mean, are you saying we shouldn't have these rankings until it's over, or should we let more teams in, or what's your plan?
My plan is they should have a bigger expansion. They should have an 18.
Okay, yeah, I agree. Now, do you cap it at 8 in your mind, Robert, or because some folks, you know, think, in fact, Jim Christian said last week what I said a couple of years ago, that I would prefer a 16. I have kind of rethought that and kind of pared it down to 8 myself. Are you good with 8, or do you think we should go a little bit deeper and get into 16 and have another round?
I would say 8. 8 okay. would be perfect because you have a champion from every conference. But see, this year it's really screwed up, and I think Ohio State's getting the shaft. Because, you know, they're like Michigan. You know, I'm not taking anything away from Michigan, and I hate Michigan. They have 3 signature wins just like Ohio State has 3 signature wins, and the teams that they have beaten when they were ranked are still winning. Oklahoma for Ohio State.
Sure.
They're winning. Look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin is still winning. It's teams like that, and even Nebraska. Nebraska was ranked 10th when Ohio State beat them. 3 teams that Ohio State has beat signature wins. Who has Penn State beat other than Ohio State?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that's the answer. Ohio State, that's what they did. And if you look at, I agree with everything that you're saying right now, and I also agree there should be 8. The thing is, I don't think, you know, it's Ohio State you'd have to worry about getting the shaft here, even in these top 4, and certainly not in the top 8. You know what I would wonder, are you much of a Mac fan?
A Mac fan?
Yeah, well, yeah, the Mac teams.
Yeah, I actually like Toledo. Toledo is really good.
Well, the reason I ask is about Western Michigan, for example, because if we were to have an 8-team playoff, the 5 Power Conference champions would automatically get in, and then there would be 3 at-large teams, and I wonder if they would have any room for a team like Western. Let's assume they finish undefeated for the sake of discussion, because they're 10-0 right now, and they're ranked 14th.
But I think
in a playoff of 8 teams, I don't think they would make that. The other 3 at large teams would probably be 1 or 2 lost teams over a Mid-American champion that's undefeated.
But if you have a team that's undefeated the whole year, they deserve more than anything to be in there. Only for the simple fact is that they've hustled their ass off. I'm sorry to say that.
I get it. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why, Robert, why I wondered if you would, you know, look at 16. Because I think the only way to really get a team like that in for the committee to actually say so is if you are in 16. I don't think they're going to be, you know, climb high enough to make the top eight in a top eight scenario, and they certainly are never going to get into the top four, even if they finish 12-0 or 13-0, counting a conference championship game. So that's the difficult part of it. Hey, my friend, I got to run. I appreciate it. I want to get to our guest, Drew Hallett, joining us. Drew is with MaizeAndBrew.com, a fan site for the Michigan Wolverines, who suddenly find themselves in a very, very difficult spot after Saturday's loss to the Iowa Hawkeyes. Hey, Drew, how are you?
I'm doing good, Bob. How are you? How's your day then?
We're good, buddy, man. Thanks for spending the time here. Before we get into the fallout over the loss to the Hawkeyes, let's find out your thoughts on the Wilton Spate situation. A few hours ago this morning, I saw Wilton Spate had an injured shoulder, might be a game-time decision against Indiana, and I thought, well, no big deal. It's Indiana. Now we find out within in the last hour or so, it's not just a game-time decision. He's done. Broken collarbone, he's going to miss the rest of the year. What kind of an impact does that have on a team that has only started Wilton Spate all year long?
Well, first I want to start out by mentioning that I did see the report that Wilton Spate had broken his collarbone. I did see an additional report on Twitter as well, mm-hmm. From a Michigan beat reporter, Adam Biggers, that it may not be a broken collarbone. So I know it hasn't been confirmed by the school as to the injury or the length of time. That there has been some conflicting information. Either way, it does appear that there was a shoulder injury, and it does appear that he may be out for at least the next two games. So I'll talk on that assumption, but at this point, nothing has been confirmed.
That is very interesting. I didn't see the conflicting report that you just said that says he does not have a broken collar or might not have a broken collarbone. I was also going by MLive.com, which is sourcing another website saying that this is that it is indeed. And he will, quote, miss the remainder of the regular season, they say, with a broken collarbone. But I don't know how long it takes to heal a broken collarbone. So
I think for a broken collarbone, what I've seen is that it's usually maybe 6 to 8 weeks. But so I know that there's reports out there. Either way, it does appear that there is an injury. I just don't know if it's known exactly what the injury is. But if Spate is out and he misses the Indiana game and he misses the Ohio State game, mm-hmm. that obviously has a big impact on Michigan. He's started the past 10 games for Michigan, and for the most part, he's played pretty well. He obviously did not play as well in the Iowa loss this past weekend. But one of the things that, you know, for Michigan that he had done really well throughout the season is, you know, he had done a very good job of taking care of the ball and being able to lead Michigan, you know, down the field in terms of more methodical drives and making, you know, the smarter passes, you know, underneath to, you know, keep the chains moving. Michigan hasn't necessarily been the most, you know, efficient offense or the most explosive offense, but one of the things that they've really relied on is their field position and their discipline in terms of, you know, being able to take care of the ball, converting third downs, finishing drives in the red zone. And Wilton Spate has done a very good job of doing that because Michigan has been able to rely on its defense to really hold the opponents in check, and then they would be able to use good field position and capitalize on that. If Spate is out, you bring in John O'Korn, who was in the position battle with Wilton Spate in the fall. And by most of the reports from that time during training camp, that it was a very close between Wilton Spate and John O'Korn, which is good news for the Wolverines. However, John O'Korn hasn't taken many game reps for the past 2 months, 2.5 months. And he also, you know, has a reputation for being a little bit more, you know, a little more wild with the ball, doesn't take care of it as much, maybe he's a little bit more riskier. And that could play a big role, you know, in these final two games for Michigan because, you know, they don't need an offense that's super explosive. They need an offense that can take care of the ball and move forward. And if he starts getting a little loose with the ball, that could end up putting Michigan in a very bad position. So.
We're talking to Drew Hallett of MaizeAndBrew.com and talking about the Wilton Spate injury. I was going to ask you, and you kind of touched on it a little bit when I said, what is it that separated Wilton Spate from John O'Korn in the position battle? And you say it was very, very close. Do you have any idea or any of the reports, if you recall, why it was that Jim Harbaugh said this is the guy? If I remember right, he didn't really say it. Basically, whoever jogged to the huddle in that first week against Hawaii, that's when they announced who it was.
Right. I don't believe he ever said anything specifically as to why he picked Spate over O'Korn, at least not that I can recall off the top of my mind. But by the reports that had come out, it was essentially that they were looking for the quarterback that was going to most help Michigan win And given the current situation with how, you know, how good Michigan's defense was supposed to be this season, you know, one of the best in the country, they didn't necessarily need a quarterback that, you know, had to maybe make all the big plays. They wanted a quarterback that could take care of the ball. And that definitely fit more with Walton Spate and what he was doing in training camp and practice than what John Alcorn was doing. And that's not to say that John Alcorn isn't a good quarterback.
Sure.
You know, one of the, a lot of the strengths that he had, you know, transferring from Houston was that, you know, he had a very live arm. He is more mobile than Walton Spate. You know, he could use him if he wanted to do more of a read option, you know, a little more quarterback run, some more design, because he has a little bit more elusive, not to say he's a Denard Robinson, obviously, but he can move a little bit more with the ball than Walton Spate, who, you know, 6 foot six, 240 pounds, and, you know, is kind of a statue in the pocket, even if he can avoid pressure. So I think that was really the main reason why Harbaugh went with Spate, was because he was doing a better job leading the team on drives for touchdowns and not turning over the football. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing for Alcorn, assuming he, if he does start, you know, against Indiana and Ohio State, is he not trying to force things? Is he taking care of the ball? Is he, taking what the defense gives him? If he's able to do that, I think Michigan can still be in a good position to make a run, you know, for the Big Ten for a spot in the college football playoff. But if he's loose with the football, then that's going to put Michigan in a very tough position.
Drew, can you see Michigan pulling, you know, and kind of, what's, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it, rallying around a guy like Alcorn in the same way that Ohio State had two years ago, and nobody thought that they would be able to take a guy who wasn't taking any regular season snaps named Cardale Jones and replace JT Barrett, who at the time was a Heisman Trophy candidate. Everybody thought their offense would just completely struggle and be bogged down under Cardale Jones, and all he did was play as poised as anybody could even be. And it's impossible to compare people, but I guess I want you to compare the situations. Ohio State and Urban Meyer created the right atmosphere for him to succeed, and it worked, and they won the national championship. Does Jim Harbaugh have that same kind of ability with this group if they do have to try to go it alone here and beat Ohio State, among other teams, at the end of the season and win a Big Ten championship with a John Alcorn?
I absolutely think that Michigan can rally around John Alcorn if needed, to, you know, beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten and then move into the college football playoff. Does that mean it will happen? I'm not going to make that prediction right now because, you know, Ohio State is playing some of its best football right now. They're looking really good the last 2 weeks.
Sure.
But I think it would be, I don't think it would be correct to say that because of this injury that Ohio State is going to be the overwhelming favorite and that Michigan doesn't have a shot in the game. I do think that because Michigan has, their success has very much been, they've been relying upon their defense, and that has really been the, you know, the strength and the foundation of this team and where, you know, why they've been so talented. I think it's going to, it will put more pressure on the defense that they're going to have to get stops, that they won't, they're going to have to, they can't make as many mistakes. And, I definitely think that's going to put more pressure on them, but they, I do believe that Michigan has the pieces around John Alcorn in terms of the receivers and Amar Darbo, Jehu Chesson, Jake Butt, that they can help him out. Where I really think it's going to matter for Michigan is going to be the offensive line and the running game. Obviously it struggled a great deal against Iowa. The offensive line had a tough time, creating holes for Michigan's running backs. And I think because if they're going to have to rely on John Alcorn, who again hasn't faced a first string defense really, you know, since training camp, or at least, you know, when he was a sophomore at Houston in 2014, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to have to throw him into the fire and he's going to have to be ready. But I think because of Michigan's reliance on its defense and that Alcorn has, you know, by all reports, you know, was pushing, you know, Spate in the battle for quarterback, I think Michigan has the atmosphere and the pieces where they can continue to rally and, you know, make a push for the Big Ten championship.
Making a push for the Big Ten championship is different than winning it, and even winning it might be a different answer to the question I'm about to ask you. Who is the best mm-hmm. team in the Big Ten? Because all of these teams are beating one another. You know, Wisconsin beat Ohio State. Penn State beat Ohio State. Ohio State beat Wisconsin. Michigan beat Wisconsin. Michigan beat Penn State, but Penn State is poised to go to the Big Ten championship game if they win out and Michigan beats Ohio State. So there's four teams in the top nine of the AP rankings this morning that are Big Ten teams. Who's the best team in the Big Ten?
Well, the top two, without a doubt in my mind, are Michigan and Ohio State. You know, Michigan and Ohio State both beat Wisconsin. And though Ohio State did lose to Penn State, I do think it's one of those games where you know, it was, you know, kind of a fluky block field goal return for a touchdown in the final minutes. Ohio State had a lot of chances to put that game away and didn't on the road at night. Just kind of those fluky things that happened in college football, as we saw happen in various cities this past weekend. I just think based on the course of both all the teams' resumes and how they've played, I think it's Michigan and Ohio State. You asked me this a week ago, I'd say it's Michigan, and I don't really have much doubt in that. After this past week, you know, it was really the first time we've seen Michigan really maybe have a chink in their armor. You know, the offense really had a hard time, you know, moving against Iowa's defense, and Iowa's defense that had been torn apart by Penn State's offense just the week before. And now with the questions about State's injury and his status and how Michigan's offense is going to move forward, I think right now if you had to pick, it'd have to be Ohio State because there's not as many questions there just based on health and what they have and the fact that Ohio State's played a little bit better the past 2 weeks.
Given the fact
but I definitely think it's between – what?
I'm sorry. I was going to say, given the fact that four of the top nine teams in the country right now are in the Big Ten, is it out of the realm of possibility and out of the question for two of them to make the Final Four and be in that CFP playoff?
So I've been thinking about this throughout the weekend because with everything that's happened and the potential tiebreakers, it makes things a little crazy in the Big Ten in terms of what can happen.
Yeah.
I still think right now it's looking like it's probably going to be just one team from the Big Ten because you're looking at Alabama and the SEC. Even if Clemson, I know Clemson lost, but even if they went out, they win their championship game. That's going to probably be them in the playoff. Even if Washington wins out, they're probably still going to make it as a one-loss team if they beat Washington State, and then let's say they beat Colorado or Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. Mm-hmm. So I still think a lot depends on what's going on with the other teams. If Clemson or Washington loses again, then things get interesting. But let's say that one of those teams does lose, and you know there is a chance for a second Big Ten team. The only way I really see it happening is if it would have to be if Ohio State wins out, but Penn State also wins out, and then Ohio State doesn't have a chance to play in the Big Ten championship game.
Right.
Then I think that a one-loss Ohio State team that is 11-1 and has beaten, you know, three or four top 10 teams in Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Michigan, and Nebraska, I would find it very hard for the committee to leave a Buckeyes team with that kind of resume and that record to not let them in.
What I want to know is, could you see them making it, the Buckeyes making it in a scenario like you just described, over the Pac-12 champion? You know, let's say Washington does beat Colorado or Utah or somebody in the Pac-12 championship game. And they're a one-loss team, and the Buckeyes are a one-loss team. The College Football Playoff Committee has said from the formation of it 2 years ago that they will look for the four best teams, not the four best conference champions, but the four best teams. If they rate Ohio State with one loss, even though they didn't play in their conference championship game as a better team than than Washington, in their one loss, do you think they'd have the guts to do that?
Well, that's the question that I had been asking before Michigan's loss because I was, you know, there was the hypothetical that if Michigan had been 11-0 and then lost to Ohio State and didn't play, mm-hmm. would a one-loss Michigan team get in over a one-loss Washington team? So now we can put Ohio State in that position because that's the more likely scenario where that's going to happen.
Right.
And so it's interesting because you're right. The criteria says the four best teams, but they do mention that they put weight on whether a team has won a conference championship. And in my opinion, I know I discussed this on the radio show with you, I think, one or 2 weeks ago, but Washington's resume is not that great. And they do not have really a quality win. I know that they have the road win at Utah, and Utah, I believe, is in the top 15 in the AP. But, you know, if you look at some of the, you know, computer rankings and, you know, those models, they don't like Utah nearly as much as, you know, the human polls do. Mm-hmm. And I really think that Washington lacks those quality wins. And, you know, isn't that also just from the fact that the Pac-12 has been down and that they did play a really soft non-conference schedule. And then you look at Ohio State, who, as I just mentioned, would have, you know, three or four top 10 or at least four top 15 wins, and their one loss would be to another top 10 team on the road in kind of a fluky manner. I think that there's a lot there for the committee to put Ohio State in over a Pac-12 championship Washington team. But does the committee have, you know, the guts to, you know, say that it's not all about conference championships, it's about the four best teams? We haven't seen that. And, you know, they've said before that they do put weight on that. And I think that's the big question. Me personally, in that situation, I put in Ohio State, because if you're going for the four best teams, or at least the four teams with the most deserving resumes, in my mind, that's Ohio State over Washington. But I think we haven't seen it from the committee yet, but that would be the big question that they would have to
answer. Because you make a very compelling case, but I also do believe they have to count conference championships. That has to have a very, very heavy weight to it. Jim Cushman's got the final question for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
You know, and I want to circle back, if I can, Drew, to the whole O'Korn and Spate and that kind of thing. And my main question here is, if it seems like some of these reports end up panning out, and that he does have the broken collarbone, at bare minimum he's going to miss these next two games on a possible Big Ten title game, right? My question is, for O'Korn and the issues with him as a quarterback that you brought up earlier, Drew, how important is it that the first time he would go out there as the guy, as the starter, would be against a team like Indiana, where maybe he can afford to make a few of those mistakes?
I think it's big. I definitely think that is helpful. Indy, I will say, though, I know it's been a kind of surprise this year, because we've seen, you know, we're so used to this Indiana team with, you know, this chaos team who is so volatile in terms of their being so explosive on offense, and then a complete sieve on defense, that Indiana's defense has actually been decent this season, and they've been a lot better than they have been in years past. Nonetheless, having the chance to have his first start, be at home against an Indiana team that I don't think has beaten Michigan in its been a long time since maybe the late 70s, maybe the 80s. I forget the exact year, but it's been a long time since Indiana has beat Michigan. And so for him to get in, you know, kind of get his feet wet a little bit, and, you know, kind of work out any rust that he may have, just because he hasn't taken too many, you know, live snaps and, you know, live game or snaps and live game action for the past 2 months, I definitely think that's helpful. It would be I think there'd be a lot more concern from the Michigan side if, for example, the Ohio State game was this upcoming week, and that this was going to be his first time taking those snaps in Columbus, in the Shoe, against a top two Ohio State team with one of the best defenses in the country. But I think because he's going to get a chance to get those reps against Indiana the week before at home, I think it will definitely be beneficial for John O'Korn and Michigan going forward, assuming they're able to beat the Hoosiers and then going into the final game, you know, the game.
It's an amazing story. There are a lot of layers to this thing that we have to peel back, and now the injury to Wilton Spate, just another one. Really, really great analysis, Drew. That's why we love having you on, my friend. Thank you so much for spending the time. We'll see what the next 2 weeks hold, and perhaps talk again before the Big Ten Championship game. Sound all right?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on, as always.
You got it. We appreciate it. There you go. That's Drew Hallett from MaizeAndBrew.com. Hey, before we move on into the Sports Center at the top of the hour, professional football note for you. A chance still exists. Today's the last day for you and three of your buddies to potentially attend the next Lions home game. We got tickets for you. To qualify, head on over to 1065theticket.com and register there. You can register today as the last day for it, to increase your chances, even if you registered in previous days. And also remember, the first 20,000 Lions fans who show up to that game before noon get a free Lions hat. So good luck to you from Toledo's home for the Lions. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're going to take a timeout now, get our top of the hour Sports Center, come back. We got a lot more college football to talk about on the national level, not just Big Ten style. We'll talk to our friend Bill Conley from SB Nation's national college football writer. He will join us next right here on The Ticket.
Barrett hands it Samuel, sweeping it wide to the right, and he's going to waltz into the end zone for a touchdown on a 3-yard run by Curtis Samuel, who made it look easy. Running into the end zone goes Curtis Samuel for his 6th rushing TD of the year. First and goal, Ohio State at the Maryland 4. Barrett in a shotgun, gets the snap. Barrett keeps it himself, moving left side. Easy waltz into the end zone for the touchdown. JT Barrett, snap to Barrett. Barrett's going to take off running himself. A block from Weber will get Barrett into the end zone for the touchdown. JT Barrett, his 2nd rushing touchdown of the afternoon.
Can't ice him again. Keith Duncan, true freshman from North Carolina, from 33 yards, and a walk-off winner. Right through, and the Hawkeyes have stunned the Wolverines. Michigan unbeaten no more. But the Wolverines challenged on the road for the first time. Don't pass the test. Pitch to Gallman. Stumbles. Not going to get there. Not going to get there. Matt Galambos came up to make the big stop, the middle linebacker. And there's 58 seconds left. And Pittsburgh has that one timeout left.
Ryan Winslow to hold it for Chris Blewett to try to knock off number 2 at Clemson. On the way and good. And it is stunned disbelief in
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And Monday Afternoon Quarterback continues into hour number two right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I'll tell you what, Washington and USC, if you didn't know any better, if you hadn't seen that USC already had three losses, you might have watched that game and said, that is one of the top five or six or seven teams in the country. They're ranked 15th after being unranked. They're 15th, but I'll tell you what, I don't see 15 or 14 better teams in the country than USC, the way they played against Washington. Welcome as we continue right here on this Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the Extravaganza. Excuse me, we continue to fight this cold, so I apologize for any raspiness that might be getting in your way of listening pleasure. Bill Conley joins us now from SB Nation, national college football writer extraordinaire, trying to break down the insanity that we saw on Saturday all across this great country. Bill, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing very well.
All right, Bill. First time since 1985, we all know the stat by now, that numbers 2, 3, and 4 in the AP Top 25 lost on the same day. That is exactly what we happened, and it kind of throws, to an extent anyway, the college football playoff rankings into a bit of a tizzy. Now, the question is chaos good for college football or bad? Now, you know, this didn't happen in the last week of the season. It happens now. There's still 2 weeks of regular season football left, then conference championship games. So all of it could sort itself out. But is what we saw with three of the top four teams in the country losing on Saturday, is that good for the college game or bad?
Well, I mean, it adds intrigue. That's part of the reason why a playoff, maybe works out pretty well for college football too, is that there are more people involved in the chase longer. It's never boring, but it was almost, we were so far away from chaos heading into last week that we're still not quite to chaos yet. But now you can talk about, Western Michigan and West Virginia, and Oklahoma being part of the title race, and Wisconsin, and all these other teams that are now at least within shouting distance because some of these teams had lost. It was a really weird arrangement that we had going where we still had four undefeated teams in the power conferences and almost no one loss teams whatsoever. Now we're at least a step away from where, if we get another upset or two, then things could get a little weird.
So we look at all of these one loss teams now. How much of a role in your mind, Bill, does when that one loss occurred factor into a committee's decision? For example, Ohio State lost 4 weeks ago. Louisville lost, 5 weeks ago. Michigan just lost. Clemson just lost. So, they're all in the same boat. They're all very highly ranked, very well regarded, but their losses came at different times of the year. And it always seems that if you lose your one game late, you are in a much bigger hole than teams that lost a few weeks early.
Well, I think with the committee, maybe that's not as big an issue. We'll get a, we haven't quite reached a full precedent on that yet with the committee, but that is one of the goals of the committee is that, each week they'll start from scratch and look at resumes and not specifically who lost and when, but it'll be kind of interesting this week. I mean, honestly, either way, it could probably benefits Ohio State compared to Michigan right now because Ohio State did lose earlier, but they also lost to a better team. And so maybe that gets factored into account here. And you can think yourself in circles in this regard when you think about, Michigan killed the team that beat Ohio State. So maybe Michigan should still be, but I would say that Ohio State might have a pretty good shot at the number two ranking now. After that, I have no idea. And I would hope that recency isn't really taken into account. It's not supposed to be. Depending on the criteria you use, you can come up with a completely different order.
A couple of years ago, whenever there were four or five SEC teams ranked in the top 10, 12, 13 programs in the country, everybody talked about what that made them, the most dominant college football conference, the schedule's a beast because everybody's good and so on and so forth. Well, today, four of the top nine teams in the country are Big Ten teams. Is that the best conference in the country, A? And B, if it is there a way to justify potentially two of those top four teams ending up, or top nine teams, beg pardon, two of those four that are in the top nine, way to justify two of them getting into the Final Four?
Well, I was trying to keep those two topics separate. If two of the top four teams are in terms of best and most deserving or whatever, however we want to define it, if they're both from the same conference, it doesn't matter how good that conference is, they're both from the same conference they're in, great. But for me personally and the numbers I use, it's not necessarily the bottom of the Big Ten is still too bad to consider it the best conference in the country. So if you're looking at it where it's like the if we're just looking at the top four teams or something, then there might be an argument. But the depth of the conference is still after that top four or five. Those bottom teams are pretty bad. The Rutgers and Purdue and whatnot really kind of drag the average down a little bit.
How much weight do you think Bill Conley of SBNation.com, college football writer extraordinaire, how much weight does the committee place on the injury to a guy like Wilton Spate, or basically how much weight do they place on it for the team? Obviously, Michigan losing that game against Iowa is bad enough. Let's say they held on. Let's say Iowa misses that last-minute field goal, literally that last-second field goal. Mm-hmm. Michigan wins, but they lose their quarterback. How much does that kind of ding them in terms of the eyes of the committee as they try to figure out who the best teams are if now they have a backup quarterback?
Yeah, that would have been pretty interesting to see. That's another thing that we don't have quite enough precedent on. We thought we were going to get it a couple of years ago with, the JT Barrett injury in 2014, but they had a little bit of a window to show that they were still pretty good with Cardale Jones, and they went out and put together against Wisconsin maybe the single best performance of the entire season. It's kind of the same deal for Michigan. If they had won that game, they'd have still been number two because they'd have been behind Alabama and they would have been unbeaten, and I'm almost positive that would have made them number two no matter what. But now they have a little sample here. If they went out, then obviously they're going to be in anyway. If they're not quite the same team that they were beforehand, they'll probably lose to Ohio State. So this is one of those situations where the committee's decision kind of gets made for it, I guess.
Back-to-back 62-3 wins for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Oh. Nebraska, the number 10 team in the country, that's unbelievable. But then they repeated it against a weaker Maryland team. The point is they're playing their best football of the season at the right time. They got Michigan State, which was thought once to be a huge, huge challenge here before Michigan week, and it won't be probably, and then Michigan. Is Ohio State the second-best team in the country today?
They've certainly bounced back. This is kind of a three-act season for them. The first, five games of the year, they were probably the best team in the country. Right up until that Indiana game started to kind of shift, started to kind of reveal a couple of flaws. Then they really struggled to beat Wisconsin. They lose to Penn State. They barely get by Northwestern. That was a tough stretch for them, but, they've been almost perfect the last 2 weeks again. So, yeah, if this is what we can see moving forward, and it really does seem to be almost like an expectations thing sometime with an Urban Meyer team, the fewer the expectations they have, the more the spotlight is off of them, the better they play. If that's the case, they might not have that much longer because the spotlight's coming back on. So it's going to be really weird to see what happens here over the next couple weeks if they beat Michigan but they lose the tiebreaker and Penn State goes to the Big Ten title game. My personal thought on that is that the best four teams should be in anyway, and that would include Ohio State. But we'll see what the committee thinks about that whole conference title bump thing.
You know, the committee obviously has to look at big wins and statement wins over highly ranked teams. And then they, of course, look at losses. Do you think they consider near losses when they try to separate? Because they're trying to separate these teams by thin strands.
Right.
What I mean by that is, I'm not trying to be a hater on Clemson, who was a very worthy title game opponent last year. But for two of the last 4 weeks, they really should have lost on last second field goals. You know, NC State missed a 33-yard field goal at the gun to beat them. And then they do lose to Pitt. I'm looking at a team here that I want to see as a dominant team, but I don't. I just see them as a very vulnerable team. Even the win over Louisville, which was their statement win, to me, I don't think they win that if it isn't in Death Valley. I think, they fed off of their crowd a little bit. But I just, as the season has gone on, I'm losing faith in Clemson as being one of the top four teams in the country. Am I seeing it wrong?
Well, they say, the committee says, they do not take margin of victory into account, and that is maddening. That's one of your best pieces of information. Otherwise, you don't need to watch teams at all. Just match it up on a spreadsheet. They beat them, and they beat them, right. So therefore, And if you do that, then Clemson still looks very good because, they won at Auburn. They beat Louisville. In this instance, it doesn't matter how close or how far.
Sure.
They've won at Florida State, which looks like a better win again, and you don't see that they barely beat Troy. They barely beat NC State. Etc. So on paper, looking at nothing but the quote-unquote transitive proper, they're fine, but they're going to win their conference, and maybe that gives them a bump over an Ohio State team that has looked absolutely ridiculously dominant for a good portion of the year. That's frustrating. I understand the whole most deserving argument, but best matters more to me, and the more you try to take away from your margin of victory and things like that, the less you're looking at who's actually good, and you're just looking at, again, like a spreadsheet, and I hate that.
Bill Connolly joining us on from SB Nation, I should say, national college football writer right here on the Extravaganza. Bob France with you, and Jim Cushlin is here as well. Jim, go ahead.
And now that we're in this chaos, Bill, and you have all these one-loss teams, and there's all sorts of tiebreakers and whatnot that'll end up becoming involved over these course in the next couple weeks, one thing that that's obviously going to come up, and it's already is, at least related to the Buckeyes, is it possible that a non-conference champion is going to end up as one of the four? My question is, now that these I'm basing this off of AP's ranking today, since the playoff rankings of course won't come out till tomorrow, which conference or which team truly has a better shot, in other words, of making it to the playoff but not even going to their conference's title game? Is it clear-cut Buckeyes, or is there an argument to be made for maybe Louisville?
I really like Louisville, too. I think those two teams are in the same boat in terms of showing a ridiculously high ceiling. But, yeah, this is – I mean, I said the word precedent earlier. This is going to set a precedent in terms of how the committee acts in response to, as we were saying, a two-loss conference champion and a one-loss dominant team. And I think Ohio State is definitely ahead of Louisville in the pecking order, just seeing what they – how they have viewed Louisville so far and their resume and everything, and that's fine. But yeah, if you get to the end of the year here and Ohio State's number two in the AP poll, and Wisconsin's like number five, but they beat Penn State for the Big Ten title, we hear a lot about the conference title bump and whatnot, but it would be crazy to me for Wisconsin to get selected when they have more losses and when they didn't beat either Ohio State or Michigan. And in this example, Ohio State beat Michigan, beat Oklahoma, who's charging along here as well. It would be crazy to me, and I hope the committee doesn't do it, but I can't guarantee they won't. We haven't seen what kind of choice they make in that regard.
We were speaking earlier on the program, Bill, about another scenario with the Big Ten, and that is that Michigan actually beats Ohio State, comes to the Big Ten championship game, and then loses to Wisconsin. Ohio State now has two losses. Michigan has – hold on a second. I don't think I did that right, did I?
No, that'd be –
I had a scenario where all four teams had two losses. I'm correct. Michigan goes into the Big Ten championship game, loses to Wisconsin. So now Wisconsin gets the revenge for their loss to Michigan earlier. So Wisconsin has two. Michigan now has two. Ohio State has two by virtue of losing to that last game to Michigan. And Penn State, as we know, didn't make it to the conference championship game with two. Four of them with two losses. At that point, is it just de facto whoever won the conference championship, in this case Wisconsin?
In that scenario, I could almost see Wisconsin making it. I can almost see myself being okay with it. In the other scenario where Ohio State's sitting there at 11-1, that would drive me crazy. But in this instance where they all have the same record and one of them won the conference title and by beating another one, especially one of the top two in Ohio State, Michigan, I'd at least be somewhat okay with that. I'd still be a little queasy if Ohio State was still the demonstrably better team, but it's harder to argue at that point.
Is there a scenario, though, where none of them make the Final Four?
At this point, I would say no, but I mean, obviously we can craft one if we...
I mean, you know, and just throwing it in there, you got Bama, and let's say Clemson doesn't lose again. They're a conference champion. Louisville is not a conference champion, but they're a one-loss team as opposed to the two-loss Big Ten champion in the scenario I just laid out. And let's say Washington,
yeah.
You know, does it with one loss as well. There's a chance that the Big Ten, at least in theory, that right now, as of this point in week 12, has four of the top nine teams in the country, doesn't have a representative in the actual Final Four.
Well, let me put it this way. So tomorrow when they release the rankings, who is ahead? Wisconsin or Louisville? I think that's going to give you your answer. I think Wisconsin's probably going
right now,
to be ahead.
It's still one loss versus two losses, right?
Right. But I mean, if Wisconsin ekes ahead of Louisville now, they can only get further ahead moving forward because they would have the conference title bump, quote unquote, and everything else. So I would say that if Wisconsin is ahead of Louisville, and again, I think based on resume and based on how much they don't seem to respect Louisville's schedule, they were seventh a couple of weeks ago. It wouldn't surprise me if Wisconsin was ahead, and if they are, then they're golden. At that point, one of those teams is probably going to make the Big Ten or make the playoff.
Right.
If Louisville's ahead of Wisconsin, though, then technically they could still do it, only they'd still be barely ahead, and then Wisconsin would beat Michigan at the end of the year, and they'd bump ahead probably anyway.
That would be a shocker to me, only because, and I know that the polls had diverged a little bit from, or maybe the playoff rankings have been divergent from the polls a little bit, insofar as two Michigan and three Clemson in the polls, and the playoff committee had them reversed.
Right.
But to do what you just said would be a leap, because both polls have Wisconsin at six and Louisville at three. If they were to jump them three spots, talking about the committee, they would essentially say, you know what, the polls mean nothing to us. None of those people know what they're doing.
Right. I think that's possible. I mean, they had Louisville 6th last week, and like I said, they had them 7th the week before that. So I think it's clear that you don't score many points for blowout wins. And that, again, that's unfortunate. If you're running the score up, that's one thing. But if you're just incredibly better than the other team and therefore, you know, you're killing them in the first half, that means something. And so I think Louisville is being punished a little bit, by not taking that into account. But in this case, it works out for the better for the Big Ten. And like I said, watch 6-7 tonight. I think that's going to be the key here. Or, you know, watch Washington, Louisville, and Wisconsin. Because they could punish Washington too. They kind of seem to want to punish Washington a couple of weeks ago as well. So those are the three that I think will be the most interesting to look at.
Is there any way for a team that we have not talked about in this interview to crack that top four between now and the final ranking?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the Big 12 champion's still going to have a chance, I think. I think that's basically it. You could, like a Colorado or a Utah, a two-loss Pac-12 champion, I think that would be probably too tricky, and I don't think they would have a good enough win. They would only have the Washington win to really boost them at that point.
What about two-loss Oklahoma?
Yeah, two-loss Oklahoma or one-loss West Virginia, whoever wins that game this coming weekend, especially, I guess, if it's a one-loss West Virginia where they, you know, could have that 11-1 record. It'd be interesting to see where they fall next week. I don't think so. I think we know who the seven-team pool here is for the national title playoff at this point, but those are a couple things that are worth watching.
Yeah, no question about it. And then the last thing, is Nick Saban and Alabama, are they just kind of sitting back and laughing at all these fools trying to try to fight for the scraps that they leave behind as they are the clear-cut number one team in the country?
Well, we know that Nick Saban doesn't laugh very often, but... the first, like I said, I think the first few weeks of the year, you could have made a really good case that Ohio State had been the best team in the country, but Alabama's hit fifth gear. Basically since that Arkansas game where they kind of only won by the amount they did with a couple of return touchdowns and whatnot. Since that point though, they have been just a wrecking machine and somebody has to catch up. I think really only Michigan, Ohio State, and Louisville probably have the ceiling to do it. But Alabama's just hitting that ceiling every week. It's pretty scary.
No question about it. Bill Conley, SBNation.com. Bill, before you go, give us your top four for tomorrow. No, let me rephrase, not yours. What top four will the committee come out with tomorrow night?
You know, one's obvious, but I am curious. I think it's probably Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, Clemson 4. I would say that's probably the most likely scenario.
So the Michigan loss doesn't even budge them because they were 3 going in.
They were 3, yeah.
The loss and the loss of their quarterback.
This is a case where 2, 3, and 4 losing all together might actually result in kind of a 0. You know, there are still a couple of other one-loss teams there, obviously, but I think that's probably what we're looking at. They could surprise me with Louisville, but I doubt it, especially since Louisville kind of messed around a little bit this last week before finally pulling away from Wake Forest. Not that they actually watched the games, but you know what I'm saying.
I do indeed. Bill Conley, SBNation.com. Bill, great stuff. We appreciate your analysis always when you visit us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day. All right, there you go. That's Bill Conley, SBNation.com, with a national perspective. I like talking to people who don't have a bias. When we talk, you know, about college football and college football playoffs, we have a clear-cut bias. We're Big Ten homers here for Ohio State and Michigan, and obviously we love the MAC here, you know, Toledo and BG. And you know what, Jim Cushman, sooner or later somebody's going to have to make a point and make a case. You know, in this Western Michigan story, they're 10-0. They're the only one of two teams in the top 20 that are obviously undefeated, the other being Alabama, and they're 14th. They're ranked ahead of a USC team that just beat a top four team
right in
Washington, and yet they're not going to ever really get a sniff at this. And I'm not saying they should, but as a MAC, you know, supporter and being in MAC country where we are, we do have to wonder at what point does a 12-0 and a conference championship, you know, MAC team, you know, start to be able to say, guys, we understand we're not in the Power Five conferences, but geez, you got to give us a look-see.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, I was thinking about this earlier today on, you know, who gets that best of the rest bid, as I call it, not to the 14 playoff, but to all the New Year's Six games, or is that one spot? If Western Michigan wins out, how can the committee not give it to them? Which makes an interesting side point. We here at Toledo Bob are probably the only people in mid-American country who are going to be rooting for the Rockets in 2 weeks, because everyone else in the MAC, if they're smart, they got to be rooting for Western to win out and win the MAC because that's a payday then for the whole conference. They won't get into a 4-team playoff if they're if they finish undefeated. But this is another small situation of where an 8-team playoff would be outstanding. You could have a spot for an undefeated team like that, because I'm a firm believer if the playoff is big enough, i.e. at least eight, you got to get anybody who's undefeated. Well, there's only two undefeated left in college football
would be.
Right
that's
now.
Where the drama would really be. I was listening to Mike and Mike this morning, and Greenberg was complaining that if we go to an eight-team playoff, there's no drama anymore because obviously Clemson's already in, and Michigan, even though they lost, they're still going to be in, and yeah, he went on through that kind of a list. And Golic was ripping him, saying, are you kidding? No, this is crazy. The drama would still be there. It would be a little bit further down.
Sure.
This is what we would have. Would a two-loss Oklahoma, for example, or a two-loss Utah get the eighth spot in an 18 playoff, or a 12-0 Western Michigan? It's like, hey, yeah, I realize you play in a power conference, but you lost twice in your power conference.
Yeah.
You know, this non-power conference team went 12-0. Who gets that ninth or that eighth spot?
Yeah.
And who is left on the outside at nine?
And actually, by the way, it would be 13-0.
And it's also fair, more fair, in my mind, for, you know, the mid-majors, if you will, or the non-power five.
And incidentally, it would be 13-0 because they'd, of course, still have to play the back championship game. So you'd have a 13-0 type of team. And I did research on this a long time ago as I've been thinking about, hey, how do you make a real, true playoff? And going back to the 1A, 1AA split, that was in 1978, the most undefeateds there have ever been at the end of a regular season, because I had to backtrack them, had to make sure I wasn't including records past a bowl game, so I wasn't counting those. The most undefeateds there's ever been in a single season, it's only happened twice, and it's five. The average is like 1.9-something. So in other words, even in an 8-team spot, if you go on defeat, 18 playoffs situation, if you're undefeated, you should be able to defend that on the field. Not to mention, if Greenberg's talking about, oh, if it's eight teams, there's no drama, what are you talking about? If you're between, say, 7 and 11, you're playing just to get in. If you're between 1 and 6, you're playing for a home game. You still would have tons of stuff to play for. One loss might drop you out of the whole thing. One loss might mean you'd have to go on the road. There still would absolutely be drama.
Yeah, no question about it, and that's something that I would very much like to see. By the way, speaking of the MAC, and we're talking about Western, let's stay on the theme of the MAC, because I've got a four-pack of tickets to a Rockets game coming up on Wednesday, and that is the Rockets and Ball State. You know about it now. I got a four-pack, so you got time to come down to the radio station and get them tomorrow, because I think it's going to be too late today, but we can do this. As a matter of fact, Jim, I want to make sure people have time to do this before Wednesday's game. I've got two four-packs. How about I give them to the 10th and 11th callers right now to 866-240-1065. You and three friends can go see the Rockets and Ball State at the Glass Bowl Wednesday night if you are the 10th or the 11th caller right now. So eight tickets total, two winners at 866-240-1065. On the other side of that and the Sports Center, we are going to come back and talk more college football. I told you, it was a huge college football heavy day today after everything that went down on Saturday across the country. Chris Lauterbach, our friend from 11warriors.com, that's a Buckeye site, will join us to talk about their side of things right here on ESPN 106.5.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Rolling on, are we? It's been a college football-dominated conversation, really, for all 2 hours today, so why should we change now? Chris Lauterbach joins us from 11warriors.com, an Ohio State Buckeye site, right here on The Ticket. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing today?
We're great, man. Thanks for coming back. We appreciate you joining the show again. Buckeyes are playing without quite, well, I don't know. Maybe I'll ask you the question instead of making a statement. I was about to say they're playing without question their best football of the season, but they looked awfully good when they beat Oklahoma at Norman earlier on, and they started the season looking like maybe, you know, one of the top two teams, maybe even a little bit better at some point than Alabama. Then they hit that October lull in which they struggled against Indiana, Wisconsin, Penn State, and Northwestern. So let me ask you, are back-to-back wins of 62-3 over Nebraska and Maryland the best football that they have been playing all season long?
Yeah, it feels like they're hitting their stride, which I think is what Urban Meyer's intentions are every year, is to be playing your best football, you know, in November when the championships are won. So I think when you look at how the offensive line has kind of gotten a little more cohesive over the last few weeks, K.J. Hill stepping up in the receiving core to give the passing game a little bit more flavor, and the defense continuing to do its thing, I think, yeah, you could definitely argue that they're playing their best ball of the season just the right time.
So the question then, Chris, becomes, is that their best football of the season, the second best football? And I guess I'm just kind of ceding the top spot to Alabama, the only undefeated remaining team really in the Power Five conferences. They've been number one all year long. So are they the second best team in college football right now when they're playing their best?
Yeah, I think they probably are. So I agree with you. I think Alabama's kind of on a tier in and of themselves right now, which a lot of, you know, folks don't want to hear, but I think their body of work, you know, over time and certainly this year speaks for itself, at least in my eyes. Even in an SEC that's not great, they've looked pretty dominant to me. And the only other team when I think as an Ohio State fan I would be most concerned with matching up against, I think Alabama's that team. But then when you look at that next cluster, Clemson, Washington, Michigan, you know, maybe throw Oklahoma, Wisconsin, some of those teams in there, they're all a little more similar. But I think Ohio State, you know, maybe stands out as the best of that next bunch.
What's the difference? What did they change ever since that that loss to Penn State? And I can't even really say that because then they struggled to get by Northwestern. But then something happened after that Northwestern game. And again, maybe it's just when the calendar flipped over to November, but the Nebraska and Maryland wins were so dominant. What exactly are they doing differently? Or is it a chemistry thing? Is it a game planning thing? What's the difference?
Yeah, I doubt it's one thing, right? That's always, you know, what you hope's the easy answer, but I think it's probably a collection of things. Mm-hmm. To me, it's kind of what I touched on. I think the offensive line, you know, Michael Jordan's been a little better. Isaiah Prince has been a little bit better. Now, we'll see as the defensive lines, you know, maybe get challenged more as we go forward. Certainly, maybe not as much this weekend with Michigan State so banged up, but beyond that, you know, how the offensive line has performed of late, I think has really allowed, you know, the skill players to do a little bit more. Barrett's had a lot more time to throw, which is huge for him. He has a tendency to hold on to the ball maybe a little too long sometimes anyway. And with the receiving core that he's, you know, taken a full season to really develop some confidence in some of the guys, especially the true wide receivers, mm-hmm. the more time you give him to throw, I think the better off you are. So I think it's a combination of factors, but to me, I point most specifically to the offensive line seeming to gel a little bit. The wide receiving core, again, K.J. Hill stepping up to give him somebody besides Noah Brown on the outside, complementing Samuel and Curtis Samuel and Dontre Wilson on the inside. It just made the offense maybe a little bit more electric. And it seems to me like they're back to just calling plays and trying to, you know, go to the person that is open on a particular play instead of saying, I need to get Samuel this many touches or I need to get Mike Weber this many touches. Seems to me they've kind of abandoned that a little bit and just, you know, run plays they think they're going to work and go to whoever is open.
The frustrating thing about this has got to be for Urban Meyer and his guys, Chris Lauterbach of 11warriors.com, they don't control their destiny anymore, and that's a problem because they could win out. They finished the season with wins against Michigan State and Michigan, but all Penn State has to do is win out, and it's Rutgers, who is awful, who should be in a high school league, I think, someplace, and Michigan State, who, again, is, you know, I think they'll pound them in the same way that Ohio State will. Penn State wins that tiebreaker. Ohio State cannot make it to the Big Ten championship unless something happens to Penn State. Can they, and do you think they still will, make the playoffs as a non-conference championship game participant?
I think there is a path for them there. Certainly that'll be the outlier since it hasn't happened in the brief history of the playoff committee, right. And we know that the committee has gone out of their way to talk about the importance of a conference championship and certainly leverage that when they kept the Big 12 out. For not having a championship game, but I think, yeah, there are still some scenarios that could break in favor of the Buckeyes. Let's say Penn State does get to the Big Ten championship game. I still think they have to win it, and if they don't and Wisconsin beats them, that's a two-loss Wisconsin as a Big Ten champion, and I don't know that you can take Wisconsin over Ohio State. The Big Ten is going to get a team in this playoff, obviously. You know, can the committee really take a two-loss Wisconsin that lost head-to-head to Ohio State just because Wisconsin won the championship? I don't know that they can do that. So I think there's still a path there.
I don't know that they can't do that, though, given what you said. And you're right. We don't have much precedence here to go on, but they have, at least by word of mouth, you know, verbally expressed a very, very strong belief that a conference championship matters. Yeah. If you do have, you know, a one-loss team that doesn't even make it to the championship team, how do you leapfrog them over a team that whose only two losses were to the two best teams in the East, which would be, of course, Ohio State and Michigan?
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Close games both, by the way. One in overtime to the Bucks, and then a 14-7 defensive slobber knocker, if I may, against Michigan.
It helps Ohio State that that win over Wisconsin was in Camp Randall. So I think that's something that does hurt Wisconsin a little bit,
definitely,
even if they do go on to win the conference. And then, I mean, Ohio State, if you look at the AP, I know we don't have the latest college football rank poll rankings yet, but, you know, they won at Wisconsin. They won at Oklahoma, who I think is up to maybe number 8 in the AP poll, so they'll probably be pretty close to that. And then Michigan, you know, we'll see what happens with the Spade injury and how Michigan gets viewed, but if Ohio State beats a 4th-ranked or whatever they're going to be, Michigan also, that's 3 pretty marquee wins for an 11-1 team that happened to beat the conference champion if Wisconsin does win the Big Ten outright. It's going to give the committee a lot to think about, and let's not pretend money's no factor either. Ohio State fans will travel on back-to-back weekends, and I think it's not just Ohio State fans think have the best that Ohio State has the best chance to give Alabama a run. I would imagine that's in the committee's heads too.
Yeah, I think that's true. Chris Lauterbach is our guest. He is the great writer with 11Warriors.com. So, Chris, right now there's 4 Big Ten teams in the top 9 in the AP poll and in the coaches' poll. No, I'm sorry, top 10 in the coaches' poll. They got Penn State and West Virginia flip-flop 9 and 10. But 4 of the top 9 teams or top 10 teams are from the Big Ten. Is it possible that no Big Ten team could make the playoffs given the circumstances I'm about to describe? Michigan beats Ohio State, giving Ohio State 2 losses and advancing the Wolverines to the conference championship game. Wisconsin avenges their loss to Michigan by beating the Wolverines, giving the Wolverines 2 losses. So now you got a 2-loss Wisconsin, a 2-loss Ohio State, a 2-loss Michigan, and a 2-loss Penn State. Is it possible that none of them gets in over, let's say, a 1-loss conference champion out in the Pac-12 like Washington, a 1-loss conference champion in Clemson, and perhaps a 1-loss at-large team like Louisville if they end up at 11-1?
I mean, you know, anything is certainly possible, but I think in that situation where chaos truly erupts in the Big Ten, I think you might have a greater chance of the committee playing the card of, oh, this, like they've done with the SEC for all these years, of how just so tough that conference is, they all beat up on themselves, quote-unquote. I think you would kind of run into that scenario, and then they would just have to take – then at that point, I think it would be a default that they would take whichever Big Ten team happened to win the actual Big Ten, you know, the Big Ten championship game, if you're talking about a bunch of 2-loss teams.
Well, and, the, you know, and you have to, you also have to consider then the Pac-12, or excuse me, the Big 12, because you mentioned Oklahoma rising, and certainly they are. And right now they're 8-2, and what do they have left on their schedule? Oklahoma has Oklahoma State, of course, in Bedlam, and that's a 13th-ranked team. Oh, and West Virginia. So 2 quality wins against West Virginia's top 16 right now and 1 loss. Oklahoma State is 13th right now. If Oklahoma is to finish 10-2 in the Big 12, and they don't have a conference championship game, but they're 10-2, what does a committee do in the scenario I just described, a 2-loss Wisconsin team in the Big 10 championship game, or a 2-loss Oklahoma team that finishes with on a roll of, what, 2-4-6-8 would be about a...
It'd be 9 in a row.
9-game winning streak, including wins over in their last 2 games over top 16 teams.
Yep, no, that would definitely that would be an interesting scenario to see what they would do. I don't think, you know, that's why we play the games, I guess, but that would definitely be an interesting scenario if it breaks that way in the Big Ten, where everybody beats up on everybody and Oklahoma goes on a run, you know, not having a Big 12 championship game, you know, will that or will that not hurt them in that scenario? I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But you're right, a nine-game winning streak for Oklahoma would certainly make them a threat.
Are you in the eight-team camp with the rest of us? Seems like everybody I've talked to today, including Jim Cushlin, my producer here and co-host, we all say we got to get to 8 teams. And that's not going to happen this year, of course, but that would alleviate some of this, and I think it would really create some great theater, too, if you just look at, again, the top 8 right now in the college football playoff rankings. If you were to just kind of break that down there, you would have some wonderful matchups, 1 versus 8, 2, 7, 3, 6, and 4, 5. It would create some great drama, but is it too much football to ask them to go another round?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's too much to ask them at all. This is all about money and timing and the bowl system and everything else besides what it should be. So yeah, I think eventually we're going to get there. You know, nothing with the NCAA is going to happen quickly, so you got to crawl before you walk. And I think 4 games is crawling, but 8 teams is where ultimately they're going to land. I mean, there's too much money at stake really not to. But you're right, because, I mean, if you do that, you got the Power 5 all get an automatic, right, and then you can take 3 at large from them. And then if you're supposedly the 9th best team in the country, nobody wants to hear you whine about that, whereas if you're the 5th and get left out, sometimes that can be a little harder pill to swallow. So
that's an interesting statement, because we sit here in MAC country, in Mid-American Conference country right now, and right now the 14th ranked team in the country is an undefeated Western Michigan team. They're 10-0. If a team like that goes 12-0, then wins their conference championship game is 13-0, and is left in the ninth spot, for example, behind a 2- or 3-loss eighth-ranked team from a power conference, then there's going to be some people who say they doggone well have a right to cry.
Yeah, but not as many people who care that they're crying.
But we here in the macro, I mean, we're weird. We're, you know, in Toledo,
oh,
Ohio,
I get
there's,
it. But,
there's
yeah.
Big Ten to the north of us, into the south of us, and there's MAC all around us. So, you know, we follow all of that very closely. But I think that's something that would certainly have to be addressed down the line. I hear music playing faster than I thought I would get it. So, unfortunately, Chris, it looks like we're done. I appreciate you joining us. Real quick, before you hit the bricks, though, could you tell us who will the committee select as their top four when the third edition comes out tomorrow night?
Oh, when it comes out tomorrow night, yeah, you're going to probably have, what, Bama, Ohio State, probably, what, Washington, or not Washington, gosh, who is it going to be?
Louisville probably jumps back up in, do you think?
Louisville's going to be back up there, and then, yeah.
Clemson I think, and Michigan, probably. One of them doesn't drop out.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be maybe Clemson that holds on.
All right, we'll wait and see what happens there. Chris, keep up the great work at 11warriors.com. We appreciate your time.
All right, have a good night.
All right, you too. Thanks so much. Music is the play, and that means we are done, and that means Drive Time is coming up next. Stay where you are. Mike Miller will have you for the next hour. We appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow, 3 o'clock, right here on The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.